Out of the dark of the deep range and into the light of the deep strange. Come at the hour, come at the mothership that is Coast to Coast AM, and good evening to you. Hope you had a good week, strange week. I've been waiting for this for a long time. And now, it's about to come to pass. Our guest tonight is Governor Jesse Ventura. His last appearance was over a year ago, July 25, hosted by Mr. Norrie. As you may know, Jesse Ventura is the former independent governor of Minnesota. He's also a former U.S. Navy SEAL, professional wrestler, movie actor, and a visiting fellow at Harvard Kennedy School of Government. He is currently the host and executive producer of True TV's Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura. He has a reputation as the ultimate nonpartisan truth seeker. And by now, you know he has no qualms about questioning authority. He has a new book, They Killed Our President. Yep. 63 reasons to believe there was a conspiracy to assassinate JFK. That's just one of those things that we won't ever let go. I'll be privileged to have Jesse Ventura on the program for 2 hours, and then I'll talk with you for the following two, make up for a little bit of, we had our Ramajama last Friday night. That's normally open line Friday night, but, and it was great to have Tyrell Ventura on, and you can tell who his daddy is. All you have to do is just listen to him speak. So this is great. First come at the son, then come at the father. So anyway, and perhaps take some calls with Governor Jesse Ventura in the second hour of the program. So you got 2 minutes to go get yourself a proper cup of tea or whatever tickles your fancy, and we'll be right back. I'll drop in the news items later in the program because there's a bunch of them, and everything from insensitivity except on, you know, on InfoWars for the killing of this person that was driving in a bizarre fashion. Did you notice all the shots went off and then the car disappeared and the car reappeared and there weren't any bullet holes in it? And then more shots. And they sure got those thank you, Capitol Police badges printed up quick, didn't they? Unbelievable. Anyway, I digress. And it gets easier and easier all the time to digress. So let's rebound, take this short break, and come right back with the man they used to call the body, who, when he became governor, said that he hoped to become the mind. I call him the man, Jesse Ventura, next on Coast to Coast AM. In his new book, They Killed Our President, 63 Reasons to Believe There Was a Conspiracy to Assassinate JFK, former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura reopens the investigation on the most controversial case in American history, the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. He writes, when I was a teenager back in the 60s, I initially believed the Warren Commission when they told me that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin, but then too much didn't add up. The government couldn't wait to close the books on the case. Me, I never let it go. I've done my own research from Dallas to Havana. Welcome to the program, Governor Ventura.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you here. This, as meaningless and vacuous a gesture as this may be, I'm giving you the we're not worthy bow right now.
You don't have to do that at all. There's no problem there.
You, if you don't mind my saying so, sir, you have had one hell of a career.
Well, you know, I'm 62 years old now, and if I'm lucky enough to live to 75, 80, or whatever, I don't want to have to look back and say woulda, coulda, shoulda. And so I really try to do everything I possibly can. And, you know, I've had such a variety of jobs, it might be that I just can't hold a job for over 4 years.
Yeah, well, if I wasn't sitting here, I might actually be totally unemployable, so it's good. I was already a talker, and then I got into this this game here, and now I can't shut up, as my friends will attest, what few remain. You know, this whole Kennedy thing is coming up. It's November is Kennedy month, 50th anniversary and all that, And this book is very timely in its release. And as I go through this, there's so much in there that I'm not a student of that assassination thing, but there's so much in here that I don't want to give the book away. But as we go through our hours together, I'd sure would like to touch on a lot of this stuff.
Well, feel free to do so. And we did the book. I did the book on purpose because it's the 50th year of the anniversary. And I really did the book for my own selfish reasons. You know, it's not for the money because I truly don't need the money. I mean, it's nice that you make money off a book. But I did it because I've been studying the Kennedy assassination really a lot since 1985, ironically, when the world of pro wrestling made a change. Prior to that, it was all regional territories. I believe there were 26 of them around the country, and you had to drive from town to town and live in the particular area. But then when Vince McMahon took it national along with cable TV in the mid-80s, that changed everything, and you started flying in airplanes. You know, you might be in Cincinnati, Ohio one day, and you could be in Salt Lake City the next day, so you had to fly planes. And anyone that's ever flown planes for a living, to earn their living, knows that you spend a great deal of dead time. You sit in airports, and you sit on airplanes. And so I then started reading every book and all the information I could get on the Kennedy killing, because I found it so compelling and interesting, because this was a real live event. You're not reading fiction. The people are real that they write about. And so in light of that, that's how I educated myself on it. And then I just felt that for whatever it's worth, 100 years from now, after I leave, have long left the planet, I wanted people to know that the 38th governor of Minnesota did not buy the Warren Commission and did not buy the official story that Lee Harvey Oswald killed our president.
What was your first, what's the first thing that looked funny other than the lone gunman with an Italian contract Mauser rifle that has been reputed to be unable to hit the ocean if you're standing on the beach?
Well, actually, it's called the Mannlicher Carcano.
Yep.
Rifle. That's it. It's not a Mauser. It was initially identified as a Mauser by some very people that knew weapons, so there could well have been a switch done there, because of course, the Mannlicher had a great paper trail on it, and at that time, you could buy any rifle in Texas, and you didn't have to fill out anything. So if you're going to kill the president, why would you purchase a rifle that left a paper trail? Not a smart thing to do. The first thing I think that probably my curiosity rose from was the fact how easily Jack Ruby was able to assassinate Oswald 2 days after Oswald allegedly assassinated the president, because it was just too pat. There would be no trial then, and the main culprit, or the suspect, if you want to call him that, was now murdered. And, you know, and so that was really it. But I was only 12 years old when it happened. I was in seventh grade. And at that age, you believe everything pretty much. And of course, a couple years later, the Beatles showed up and the Rolling Stones. So it kind of took my mind off it as a teenager. It was a unique time to grow up in the 60s and see the change that took place in the world with the arrival of the Beatles. And then I did my 6 years in the Navy when I got out of high school. And what piqued my interest from that point was when I went to junior college for a year on the GI Bill. And while I was at junior college, Mark Lane happened to come there and speak. And of course, he wrote, I think, the original book, Executive Act, or something like that. I don't even remember what his book was, but he was the first person I ever heard truly question the Warren Commission, and it kind of opened my eyes up and thought, wow, you mean there's dispute here, that it's not cut and dry? And then, of course, when it happened in the mid-80s, the wrestling changed, was really when I got back into it and started truly studying it.
Gotcha. That's a Pruder film. That's something else, isn't it?
Well, and the unique thing is, we would have never seen the Zapruder film. Time Life bought the Zapruder film. Time Life, of course, had great connections, if you look at history, with the Central Intelligence Agency. And they were never going to release it. The only reason the public was ever able to see the Zapruder film was because Jim Garrison got it subpoenaed. He learned of it in his trial in New Orleans, I think it was 1967, or whenever when that trial took place. And so if it hadn't been for Jim Garrison and his trial in New Orleans, the public today still would have never seen the Zapruder film. It would have been hidden from us.
Well, you know, in your book, you mentioned frangible ammunition. I'll tell you a little story. I wish I'd tell you. I'll tell you just very briefly. When I was a kid, a little kid, I've spent a great deal of my life in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. There was an old real estate lady, and she was in her 80s when I was a child. And she even has a little park named after her, Wessler Park in Arlington. And her personal nurse was Marguerite Oswald. And I thought that was, she was a fairly interesting person, but, you know, nothing special. And then as the years went by, I lived on a street in Dallas that, that another man lived on named General Edwin A. Walker, who was supposedly shot at by Oswald in April 63 before the assassination. And one thing led to another. I remember as a kid, I thought, gee, this is awfully pat. A lone gunman with a 38 snub comes down to where there are cops everywhere, shoots Oswald, and then the next thing I know, he's passed away from cancer in the hospital. You know, and I remember in the seventh grade writing this stuff down. I just wanted a memento of what I remembered. And then when the Zapruder film came out, I had a B in there a while ago. Zapruder film, incorrect. It, like people call Bob Geldof. Sorry about that. For anybody who heard it, I'm sure somebody did. It was obvious to me that the man was struck. Our president was struck from the front, and it also was obvious that he was hit twice. Looked like once in the throat and then once in the head.
Oh, so, yeah, most definitely. You can see it in the film that when he emerges from behind the street sign, he's clutching his throat. Both arms are up in the air, and he's gasping for air and clutching his throat. And then, of course, it's moments later, the fatal headshot hits him, and he flies vehemently back and to the left. And if you look at the blood spray evidence, the car had almost come to a halt. And because there were many eyewitnesses that saw the brake lights go on to where it almost came to a halt, and all the blood sprays flew so far backwards to his rear that it actually covered the motorcycle windshields on two different motorcycles, so behind him. So when you look at the blood spray evidence, the fatal headshot obviously came from the front. It did not come from the rear.
Well, I decided one day to go over there with a guy who had gotten me some gasoline on the freeway one afternoon, and he had an identical motorcycle. So he took his Harley up, and he said, what's the matter? I said, I'm out of gas. So we went and got some gas, and he came down to this radio station upstairs from Channel 8 Television, WFAA, the ABC affiliate, who was right there, like within running distance from the shooting. And I said, come over to the studio sometime, and I'll show you the studio, and drinks and beef are on me. And so he came over, but he said, you know what I really want to do is go over to Dealey Plaza and look around. So we did. And what I found over there was something I was absolutely stunned by. Everybody has probably seen the motorcycle cop. You mentioned the blood on the windshield. One of those policemen had his motorcycle laid over in the street and was peering down into a storm drain. You know, one of those slot drains.
Sure.
Catches rainwater. And I remembered seeing that. And also, this had come about the time that one of the producers over at 8 decided to run a thing that ran in the middle of the night called the Kennedy Tapes. It was all the film that they had from that day. And it ran between like 4 and 5 in the morning, so I don't know how many people saw it. I kept seeing the scene. So when this fellow picked me up off the highway, got me some gas and got me going again, we went over there, and this is what I found. And I don't know, this is really strange, because last Friday, your son and Oliver Stone's son were both on the program.
Okay.
Which was a delight, by the way. He's a credit to you, and it was a real pleasure having him on the show.
Thanks. Well, Sean Stone's a good kid, too.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
I worked with him on my last year at Conspiracy Theory, and I really enjoy Sean Stone always. Both of them were fun to work with.
Well, if I may call you Jesse.
Sure.
This is something that I observed that I cannot believe no one ever mentioned, at least not to my knowledge. The decorative balustrade that comes across that bridge came back toward this architectural treatment, comes across the railroad bridge there at Main Elm and Commerce, and comes back toward the school book depository and terminates in about a 10-foot by 10-foot patio area. All in the same, that balustrade just continued, made this square, and there's a little 3-foot area cut out of it so you could walk into it. You could set up a lawn chair or whatever. If it weren't for this hole in the floor, about 3 feet by 3 feet with no cover on it, and I thought, now, what is this? And I see these U-shaped rungs sunk into the side of the shaft going down there, and it goes way down there. And as I'm looking, I'm going, why has no one ever even mentioned that this thing exists? Because as I'm looking over here, if you came up out of this hole with your rifle already, bolt-action rifle already chambered with the safety on, slung over your shoulder, come up out of that thing, take a kneeling position, you shoot once, you rack the bolt once, you shoot again, that would be the precise timing that those two shots struck the president. 2 weeks, when I heard the announcement that Oliver Stone was coming to Dallas to film JFK, and the rumors abounded that there were going to be things revealed in the film that had heretofore not been discussed, I thought, I thought about this place, and I thought I better get a camera and get over there and take a picture of it. And when I got over there, this appeared in the Dallas Morning News. So, and I stalled a couple of days and missed it. And by the time I went back to take that picture, that was completely gone, and that whole area was totally blacktopped over. Now, you only have my word for it, but I'm telling you, I saw this. And it was the perfect. And then later on, I had a lunch with a writer, and he said, hey, the old man Bonanno, he wrote his memoirs, and he said they used the storm drains. You got any storm drain lore in your book?
None whatsoever. So what you're telling me is all new to me. I still am a believer the shot came from behind the picket fence at the grassy knoll. I'll go with you, and I'm not denying that yours, you know, I'm not saying that you're not correct, but I've never heard of that, really. I believe, you know, Lee Bowers was the witness that was up in the railroad tower who, you know, Stone depicted in this film, who saw the strange flash and all that from the two guys behind the fence. And plus, there's actually the Mormon photo, which was taken the opposite direction as a brooder. And with modern day technology today and the Mormon photo, you can actually almost see the gunman at the picket fence. So my belief is the fatal shot came from the grassy knoll at the picket fence.
Yep. But well, it's entirely
on that. We certainly can. One thing we can agree on, though, I think, is that it didn't come from the sixth floor depository window where at the book depository where they said that Oswald shot from.
Oh, without a doubt. And isn't it handy that there was a palm print? No fingerprint on the trigger, no prints on the bolt, no prints on the barrel, but a palm print on the stock. I mean, what? This makes no sense.
And we do cover that in my book, where the actual guy at the morgue stated that that the FBI came into Oswald's body and locked the door and was in there a long time. And when he came in, when they left, he found the stuff that you would get a palm print from.
This is unbelievable. So what became of the doctor who examined the president when he was taken to Parkland?
Oh, there were multiple doctors. We cover the doctors completely. I mean, there's doctors, there's nurses, there's probably a dozen people that were in the emergency room, and these doctors were professionals because that's a trauma center there at Parkland, and most of the doctors were all combat veterans, many of them very familiar with gunshot wounds, and we cover that completely in the book, how all of them stated how the back of the president's head was gone, it was blown out. And I actually, a few years ago, interviewed a guy named Audrey Reich, who was the ambulance driver who was actually in the room and helped pick up the president's body to put it in the casket, and he had to hold the head, and he said there was nothing to the back of his head; it was gone.
You know? You mentioned frangible ammunition. I came across some of that as a kid. There was a deserted National Guard base out by Eagle Mountain Lake, north of Fort Worth, and it and there had some rounds lying around. There were an M1 Garand clips, so it was a 30-06 caliber, effectively. And I said, "What are these stripes on the end?" And the guy said, "That's frangible ammunition. It's not like hardball. It explodes when it hits its target." We have to take our little break, but we'll be right back with Governor Jesse Ventura. I'm excited. They've killed our president. 63 reasons to believe there was a conspiracy to assassinate JFK. We're just not going to let this go, because this is Coast to Coast AM. Part of the book, They Killed Our President, 63 Reasons to Believe There Was a Conspiracy to Assassinate JFK, is the Katzenbach Memo. the smoking gun related to the tragedy of November 22, 1963. And in Jesse Ventura's book, there's a verbatim copy of a Justice Department memo from the then-acting Attorney General of the United States, Nicholas Katzenbach, to new President Lyndon Johnson's aide, Bill Moyers. It was written shortly after Lee Harvey Oswald was murdered by Jack Ruby, and is the clearest documentation that exists to this day of our government's intent to cover up the truth for whatever reason behind the assassination of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. We'll be right back with Jesse Ventura, his new book, They Killed Our President, and They Did, on Coast to Coast AM. Jesse Ventura, tell me, this memorandum, this Katzenbach memo, how did you happen to come by this document? Is this something that anybody could find? Because I can't believe it hasn't been done away with long ago.
Oh, yeah, no, it was discovered in the archives through those hundreds of thousands of documents, and I can't tell you exactly who discovered it, but it is authentic, and it just is all the documents that we refer to in the book. And one of the things that's terrific about the book, and I give great credit to Dick Russell and David Wayne, who co-wrote it with me and did a great deal of the research with me, is that we list at the bottom of paragraphs where you can go on the internet to actually see these certain documents, to hear video and audio tape and things like that are available on the internet today. So as people read the book, if they have their computer right next to them, they can reference and go to it and see it for themselves and be the judge themselves on it.
Well, you know, all these theories have abounded over the years. Somebody did a very clever piece of video that shows the driver turn around with his pistol, pulls out from under his right arm with his left hand, and shoots back over his shoulder. It's very well done, but it appears to be a complete fake, just because it's amazing what you can do with video.
Oh, yeah, I don't buy that at all, that he was shot by the Secret Service guy in the car. I don't adhere to that a bit. We feel at a conservative estimate there were six shots fired, we believe. You know, some people go as high as nine. And the key to it is two of the shots come right on top of each other through that audio tapes that came out, that broke through where the policeman left his police radio on, and they surfaced a number of years ago. And two of the shots come right on top of each other, which is virtually impossible if you're working a bolt-action weapon like the Mannlicher Carcano. And then, of course, if you watched my TV show, we tried to recreate the shooting where I actually fired with this weapon, the identical weapon that they alleged Oswald used, and it's ridiculous. And if you don't believe that I can do it, and I'm an expert marksman, well, there's better than me. In the case of a gentleman named Carlos Hathcock, who's the top Marine Corps sniper in history. He was the chief instructor at Quantico, the Marine Sniper School. And he attempted to do it with that weapon 10 times and could not make the shots. And we have quotes in the book about what he said about it, because people need to understand something. When you go into the military, the military's not stupid. They give you batteries of tests, and they really check you out to see what your best abilities are, and then of course they channel you to work that will best fit your abilities. Well, Lee Harvey Oswald was not 0300 infantry, and it was clearly because he was not a particularly great shot. Lee Harvey Oswald was a radar operator. That's what he did at the Atsugi base in Japan. So literally through his entire Marine Corps career, except boot camp, he probably even barely ever had a weapon in his hand ever, where Carlos Hathcock made his living being a sniper on an everyday basis, and he's legendary within the military. And, for someone to believe that Oswald could make those shots and Carlos couldn't, well, you're naive if you believe that, because, as I said, Lee Harvey Oswald was a radar operator. In other words, for lack of a better term, he was a pencil pusher, which I don't say that in a degrading way, because you certainly need those in the military also, the technicians and things of that. And then the fact that Oswald in the military was trained in Russian language. I mean, that there tells you that he was involved in intelligence while he was in, and probably was attached to the Department of Naval Intelligence while he was in there, which many facts indicate he was.
Well, I think the ONI was based down near New Orleans, and they had some convenient footage of him handing out pro-Cuban literature.
Oh yeah, well here. Where he was hanging out, Oliver Stone covered that great in his film. It was a funny scene in the movie where they said, "Don't you think it's a," Kevin Costner says when they're standing there with his assistants, "Don't you think it's rather strange that here's the FBI, here's the Secret Service, here's the Office of Naval Intelligence?" I remember Costner saying in the movie, "Doesn't this seem to be a strange place for a communist sympathizer allegedly to hang out?" And certainly it would be. And see, Oswald, there's a great book out called Lee and Me by Judith Very Baker. And she was Oswald's, for lack of better term, mistress or lover in New Orleans. I could never figure out, or many people, why Lee and Marina were not living together. He would come home on the weekends in Dallas, and he had that other apartment. Well, the truth be told, they were separated. They were going to get divorced, and during his time in New Orleans is when he met Judith Very Baker, and they became lovers. And they were both working for Dr. Alton Ochsner in an attempt, the famous cancer research doctor down there. In fact, if you watch New Orleans Saints football, you'll see Ochsner's name on the back of the thing when they do the press coverage after the game. He was the head of the American Cancer Society, and what they were attempting to do was they were working to create a fast-moving cancer that they could then take to Mexico City. That was Lee's job, and from there it would be taken into Havana to attempt to assassinate Fidel Castro, because what better way to kill him if they could be successful? Because then the autopsy would say Fidel got cancer. And no one would ever suspect at all that he was given the cancer. And then, as you said at the top of the show, ironically, Jack Ruby died of a fast-moving cancer.
I'll say. I mean, it didn't take but what, 6 weeks or something? It was
Oh yeah, no,
ridiculous.
it moves quick enough. In the book, it said that it would happen within 30 to 45 days.
Oh, man. I got a question that's been dogging me for years. How does a
Sure.
Marine wind up going to Russia and getting a Russian bride to come back to the States and build big, strong family? How does this happen?
What, that Lee married Marina and brought her back here?
Yeah, didn't he go to Russia?
Yeah, oh yeah, he was part of what they've discovered today through documents. He was part of what back in the 50s and early 60s of a false defector program, where certain young guys here were made to look like they were dissatisfied with the United States, and they defect to Russia and go over there and turn into almost double agents. And that's what Lee was involved in, because he went to Russia. He could speak fluid Russian by the time he got there, good enough to get by. In fact, when Marina met him, she thought initially that he was Russian. And he married her and then brought her back to the States. And when he came back to the States, the U.S. government actually gave him the money to return. And I laugh over it, because this was at an era of time where we had just finished with McCarthyism. And, people were being accused of communism here and damn near being thrown in jail for being called communists here. And here's a guy that defects to Russia, says he's going to tell the Russians everything he knows, comes back then to the United States and is never even prosecuted.
Well, this is the thing that gets me. All of these pieces of information have been out there forever. What they sealed the commission's report for 50 years, right? And now they've extended it 25 more. Is that the story?
Something like that. And here's my answer to that. If Lee Oswald was who they said he was, this little Marine private who became dissatisfied with the United States and decided to defect to Russia, and then he returned from Russia and killed and joined the Fair Play for Cuba Committee and got angry and killed President Kennedy, why would anything dealing with him have to be put in the archives at all for national security? What on earth could a little private in the Marines know? I mean, I was a member of Underwater Demolition Team 12 and SEAL Team 1, and I was an E-4 petty officer. I knew a few things, but certainly not enough that they would have to take things and stick it into the archives for 50 years, 75 years, or whatever it would be, and not allow the public to know anything. What would this guy know that would have to be put in the archives? And here's a thing that I've always brought forward. Did you know you cannot get Lee Harvey Oswald's tax return even today?
Is that right? Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't have one.
Now, here, people might say, "Well, why would you care to get Lee Harvey Oswald's tax return, and why would they hide that?" Well, that would be a paper trail as to who was paying him. So, if you got his tax return, you could then follow a paper trail to see how he was earning a living, and if it showed that through this paper trail that he was being paid by the United States government, doesn't that change the whole story? So that's the reason why you will never see Lee Harvey Oswald's tax return.
Unbelievable. I just have to read a piece from this memorandum. November 25, 3 days after the assassination of John Kennedy, 1963, memorandum for Mr. Moyers, Bill Moyers, the guy who does all those wonderful interviews, yeah?
Yeah.
The very guy. Number one, the public must be satisfied that Oswald was the assassin, that he did not have Confederates who are still at large, and that the evidence was such that he would have been convicted at trial. And then, speculation about Oswald's motivation ought to be cut off, and we should have some basis for a rebutting thought that this was a communist conspiracy, or as the Iron Curtain Press is saying, a right-wing conspiracy, to blame it on the communists. Unfortunately, the facts on Oswald seem all too pat, too obvious, Marxist, Cuban, Russian wife, etc. The Dallas police have put out statements on the communist conspiracy theory, and it was they who were in charge when he was shot and thus silenced. Unbelievable. And all this stuff is out there. I mean, why? Jesse, I'm just asking, why are nobody's feet at the fire?
Keep going to the bottom of it, where he then talks about putting together the Warren Commission. Read the last little bit, too.
All right, let's see. The matter has been handled thus far with neither dignity nor conviction. Facts have been mixed with rumor and speculation. We can scarcely let the world see us totally in the image of the Dallas police when our president is murdered. I think this objective may be satisfied by making public as soon as possible a complete and thorough FBI report on Oswald and the assassination. This may run into the difficulty of pointing to inconsistencies between this report and statements by Dallas police officials. But the reputation of the Bureau is such that it may do the whole job. The only other steps would be the appointment of a presidential commission of unimpeachable personnel to review and examine the evidence and announce its conclusions. This has both advantages and disadvantages. I think it can await publication of the FBI report and public reaction to it here and abroad. I think, however, this is the last thing. I think, however, that a statement that all the facts will be made public property in an orderly and responsible way should be made now. We need something to head off public speculation or congressional hearings of the wrong sort.
There's the key.
Wow.
That's why I wanted you to read those letters. We need to cut off any congressional hearings to look into this. I mean, that's why I led the book off with that. I insisted. I said, we need to lead the book off with the Katzenbach memo because, like I said, that's a smoking gun to the point where the guy's standing there holding it while it's smoking.
While he stands over the body.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is very damning, very damning. Well, So these are very powerful people, and if they don't want it to be told, it won't be. Is that where we are, and there's nothing we can do about it?
Well, pretty much, because, you know, it was interesting when I did the conspiracy series show. Well, let me back up a second. Many times what you'll get from the people who don't believe it, they will always say to you this. They'll say, well, come on, if it was a big conspiracy like that in the last 50 years, someone would have talked. Right? That's what they always say. Someone
oh, sure.
Talked. The point is, people have talked. But the problem is, mainstream media will not print when people talk. I mean, Richard Nixon, President Nixon, on his infamous tapes, he's right on tape saying the Warren Commission is the biggest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people. This is the president of the United States who said it. And that,
you know,
let's go back to my TV show. When we broke the story, we had St. John Hunt on, the son of E. Howard Hunt, the infamous CIA guy from Watergate. Howard Hunt confessed to his son on a deathbed confession. We had it audio, visual, and written. You clearly see he's of sound mind. He laid the whole thing out. It was called the big event. He named Kordmeier, Lyndon Johnson, Morales, one of the notorious CIA hitmen, and all of this, and said it was called the big event. When I aired that on my show, I was so excited. I said, oh my God, this is going to be headlines across America. Howard Hunt admits to Kennedy, to participating in Kennedy assassination, or knowledge of Kennedy assassination. Not one word. It aired on my national TV show, and the mainstream media wasn't one word in the mainstream media about a confession from E. Howard Hunt.
You know, normally I have something to say, but I don't right at this moment. It's just beyond everything that I can, everything that I've ever known about, you know, doing the right thing. I understand when you're at the executive level like this, the public's not going to know everything, but with all of this evidence lying around, and nobody will touch it.
Oh, no, mate. And I'll tell you this, on my book tour for this book, I mean, normally they want to talk to Jesse Ventura, this independent rogue governor from Minnesota. They love to have me talk about the government shutdown right now and all that stuff. I can't get on ABC, NBC, CBS. I got on MSNBC a preliminary part in the day for about 2.5 minutes, and even the infamous Fox News. I can't get on any of them, and it's because of the content of this book.
Where can we get your book?
Everywhere. You can get it on Amazon. It's in all the bookstores right now. It's out there. You know, you can find it. It hit the market Monday, this previous Monday morning was when it was fully released everywhere. In fact, I rode the train to Washington, D.C., and in the Hudson News thing, I saw at least 5 copies of it in the Washington, D.C. Train terminal before I came back up to New York City, where I'm at right now.
Boy, I'll tell you what, this is something else. And I'm just wondering if people have been told these things and shown these things to the point that it's undeniable and now they're numb to it.
Well, surveys and polls in that state that 75 to 80% of the public does not believe the Warren Commission. I feel that it's up to our duty then, being the 75% or 80%, we've got to convince the other 20. But maybe, you know, the other 20 is unconvincible, because we're a country that likes to live in denial a lot. We claim to want to know the truth, but we really don't. And I don't think people really want to admit that a coup d'etat happened that day. And a coup d'etat, of course, is an overthrow of the government. And it wasn't done at the ballot box. It was done with a bullet. And I don't think people want to admit that something like that could actually happen in modern day America. They don't want to believe it.
Well, we've got to take our top of the hour break and do some news and some other things. But sure. When we come back, when I spoke with General Walker, he was in his 80s. And I asked him, why do you think this was done? Why was President Kennedy assassinated? And his response really surprised me. He said, well, it's because he was a lame duck president. He was only going to have one term. And I think what he didn't say was that there was a huge agenda coming forward, and that would be the Vietnam conflict that went on from, to April 74 until 1975. A lot of people made money on that. So when we come back with Governor Jesse Ventura, we will discuss what possible reasons were there for assassinating JFK. Was it his plan to hook up with the Russians and discuss UFOs, or was it the Vietnam War? What was it? Why take him out? This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back.